Meeting of the committee members to order. We have several members that are appearing by Zoom today, and let us take a minute to get everybody organized before we have the roll call. Are those the five that we're expecting on Zoom? Very good. Madam Secretary, Regent Thomas, if you would call the roll, please.
All right, Regent Bell.
Present.
Regent Ball. Regent Ball. Regent Brinkley.
Present.
Regent Brody.
Present.
Regent Dennison.
Present.
Thank goodness you're here. Chair Milliken.
Present.
Regent Nichols.
Present.
Regent Speller.
Present.
Regent Thomas. Vice Chair West. And Regent Kurtz. We have a quorum.
We have five members present in person and five by Zoom, for a total of 10 members, which constitutes a quorum. Before we get about today's business, I would just like to make a comment, and I know we have seen these figures before, we've all been provided them, but I think they are worthy of mention, because I think it shows what is happening as far as our university is concerned. Our total enrollment for the fall semester here at WKU is up 5.8%. Enrollment for degree-seeking students is up 1.5%. Enrollment of our freshman cohort is up 3.3%. Graduate enrollment is up 5.6%. This represents the first increase in overall degree-seeking enrollment since 2010, and the first increase in overall enrollment since 2016. WKU's first to second year student retention is 6.7 percentage points, and underrepresented minority retention jumped 15 percentage points, the largest increase in 5 years. These are significant increases, and to me, it demonstrates that there's a lot of good work going on here at this university. And we can all be proud of that. And the beneficiaries of this are our students and this university, which is what this is all about. Because after all, this is the business we're in, is to educate these students and prepare them for a better life and a better existence. These things don't happen by accident. A lot of people have put in a lot of hard work, and they are all to be commended, everybody that has contributed to these good numbers. And I just felt like that was worthy of mentioning before we got started in our committee reports today. Our first committee report will be our Academic Affairs Committee. Dr. Bale, who is recovering from COVID, is here with us, and I'm happy he's able to be up and about at least talk with us. So I will turn that committee over to you, Dr. Bell.
Okay, thank you, and I am glad to be with everybody on Zoom, even though it's not near as good as being there in person. The statistics you mentioned are counter trends. You know, we're doing much better than a lot of our contemporaries that's seen in the news what's going on at Miami University up in Ohio and at West Virginia University. We should be thankful and proud of the hard work that everyone has done, as you have mentioned. A lot of that work is done in our academic areas, and Provost Fisher, assume, and Hope is present today, and we have some action items that I'll ask him to present.
So the first item we have on docket is academic program suspension for floristry minor. It was asked for by the faculty. There was a limited number, and they have chose to go a different way. What they would like to do is now focus those resources on an undergraduate certificate that will attract a greater number of people than just in the ag department. And so they're going to suspend, and they will have a new certificate as we move forward.
Any questions, comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve action item one.
So moved.
Motion from Regent Brody. Actually, these are committee meetings, and so these really need to come from committee members. We have four of our five members present. Regent Ball was unable to attend today. She notified me earlier this morning, had an unexpected emergency come up. But Regent Kurtz, Nichols, and Spiller are all there, so I'll entertain a motion for one of them.
I second the motion.
It was Regent Spiller that did it first, Philly.
You have a motion from Regent Spiller.
Okay, very good. Motion from Regent Spiller, and a second from Regent Nichols. Any discussion, comments? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Action item two.
So action item two is approval for academic program suspension for the following program, which is a Master of Science in Child and Family Studies. If you've read the material or you've looked at it, you've seen that there's been a decline in enrollment, a significant decline now to seven individuals. And what we will do is certainly teach it out at this point. But the faculty have asked to suspend the program and move the resources to the undergrad program that is growing to be more efficient.
Comments? Questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion for approval of action item two as prescribed.
So moved, Regent Spiller.
Okay. I think that was Regent Spiller.
Yes, sir.
Again, I didn't hear that real well.
Yes.
Was that you made
yes, sir.
The motion?
Yes.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
I second the motion.
Second, Regent Nichols. Any further discussion or questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Okay, motion passes. And our third action item concerns an emeritus appointment.
We have two emeritus appointments that we have put forward to the board. The first one is for Dr. Fred DeGraves, who joined us in 2011. As an assistant professor and actually worked his way up to be department chair for a number of years for the Ag Department. What we also see is that he has been proficient in all areas, that is teaching, research, and service. And one of the great things that Fred did was that he was really helped students get into vet school. That was his passion, and he is a veterinarian also. So his passion was to see that people get into vet school through this process that we have in this state that allows you to go to Auburn. So we have had significant number of students go to Auburn as vet school. In addition, he served as the veterinarian for the university, which is great because hiring one would have killed us. And that's worked out really well as we've gone forward. And he's instrumental in the Smart Holstein Laboratory. And if you don't know what that is, we have the brightest cows in America out on the farm at this point. We take data from them through data loggers and all types of things to measure productivity and to see how food changes productivity in their milk and those types of things. And he was instrumental in bringing that to here from due to his partnerships. The second person is Dr. Darwin Dahl. Dr. Dahl joined us in 1987 and served for 36 years at WKU, which is amazing to me. He has been incredibly active in research. He had 10 graduate students complete their master's thesis. He has over 20 peer-reviewed publications, and those publications in a large number of cases have students associated with them, which is important. And additionally, he has 5 NSF grants where he was the principal or co-principal investigator. And a lot of those were grants that brought instrumentation that was dearly needed for both teaching and research to the chemistry department. And from 2008 to 2010, he served as director of the Advanced Materials Institute. So both had great careers here.
All right. Shane, any comments?
No, sir. I'll just make a motion to approve.
I second that emotion. Well deserved.
All right. I have a motion and a second. Any further questions, comments? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Yes. Motion passes. And that concludes all of our action items. Provost Fisher, I think, has a brief presentation on a little update on our academic affairs. As somewhat outlined in President Cavone's recent annual review. So, Provost Fisher, I will ask you to give your presentation, please.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be in front of the board today. I want to talk about academic affairs, and I think I really want to talk about our goals and initiatives that we have going so that everybody on this campus, I've spent the last year telling everybody this, and now I'm here doing this. But before I do that, I have to say one thing. None of this could have been done without ESE, or the SOF, or the faculty,
what
or
are
the
those
deans,
beans?
And
what
everything. What?
What is all that? It's orange salad.
So what I need, everybody on campus has to be a part together. If we don't work together, we can't get things done. And what you'll see is there's a ton of stuff, and I guess I hit the thing. But all of it has been done with the people in this room and the faculty. And I will point out that the faculty has played a huge role in making us successful as we move our way down through some of these. And it wouldn't be, and I wouldn't be right if I didn't say my office, which works as hard, and the people who work in that office are absolutely amazing. And I couldn't have asked for a better group as I walked in the door to be able to be successful as we work here. So having said that, we developed goals. We developed goals in the first year I was here. So we spent 8 months listening to faculty, staff, students tell us what was the culture of WKU, how things got done at WKU, and what needed to be done at WKU. That, along with the stack that was on my desk when I walked in that hadn't been done, was kind of where we were as we were starting off and doing this. So what you will see are the goals were developed after we had collected input for 8 months to 10 months. And then we went back, looked at what we've been told, and then chose these 7 goals to work with. These 7 goals hook directly to the strategic plan. So there's a combination that goes back and forth that helps us move the 10-year strategic plan forward. So having said that, the first goal, which is to increase recruitment, retention, degree completion, and placement of students. So we've already talked about that somewhat today. I want to come back to that and show you some examples of that. And what I always tell everybody I show these to, that should be in 96 font. Because when we came in and we looked at what people told us, that was the one that constantly was talked about. That is, we had to get a handle on those to be able to move this institution forward. So I'll come back to that. Number 2 has to do, and I think is as important as number 1, which is to maintain outstanding faculty. and give them the opportunity to get professional development. Without faculty, this institution doesn't run. Without outstanding faculty, we can't do the things we've done over the last 3 years. So I think that's an important one. And some of the things we've done, a faculty compensation model that we finished when we came in. We increased part-time compensation. New faculty orientation. We will have a new coordinator compensation guidelines as we move forward, and we've expanded faculty development. CIDL, when I first got here, was really about teaching only, and now it's expanded to leadership and some other areas that allow faculty to grow in multitudes of different ways. Number three says to promote and improve academics. I'm going to come back to that one too, because that's an important one. But we've done a lot. We're in the middle of Colonnade, and we're in the middle of some interesting discussions about what Colonnade should look like and how we move forward. We do an academic program review. So when I got here, I was told by CPE that we would do an they would give us what the academic program review would look like into the future that they wanted. So I'm in year three, and I still am waiting for that. So we decided we would build our own academic program review for every group. And we externally review every program on this campus in a 5 to 7 year period. Just like you would do if you were under accreditation. So we can get an idea of how to be better, how to move into a more modern curriculum and a more modern program. Additionally, we do an annual program sustainability process to tell us whether you're growing or declining, to tell us whether you need more faculty or not, to tell us if you're not graduating people. And then what we do is we bring you in and we ask you to come up with a 2-year plan to try to move forward. You get every chance there is in the world to be able to move forward. In addition, we launched a micro-credential platform, and we now do micro-credentials, especially out of the business school, who's doing a great job at that as we speak. We now have expanded dual credit. It's crazy. And we have students who want to be here, and the best part about it is the students are now coming on campus. I think the best experience we can give them is to be on campus in our classrooms. And the best part about that is I hope we get them comfortable here and we recruit them to here. So that's what we've been doing with Warren County, and that will expand. And there's people in this room who have been key to that. And reinvestment in online opportunities. We have just kicked off some new online opportunities, and we will continue to expand it over time. So that's three. If you look at four, is DEI. This institution has been built on DEI. It's had a commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion that make people feel like they belong on this campus, and we have continued to do that with 1WKU programming expansion. We do it with inclusive teaching. We do it with books, book discussions, media groups. Yesterday was a luncheon to have a discussion, and there's two more this time period. And we now are a partner institution in the Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities. We put in an application. We were accepted to be part of that. And now we have an opportunity for our Hispanic students to get some needed information and goals and help as we move forward. In addition, we promote and enhance research and creative scholarship. And just like we heard in the convocation, I was told right before we were going to increase research, and then I was told it was 2 times increasing research as he talked, and I got worried as the president talked. But I think we can do that, and there's some really interesting things. All of the grant programs were put back into play for faculty and with extra money so that we could get more faculty the opportunity to start their research, to kickstart it, to get it to doing grants outside of here. We also have professional development now where you can get grant writing help. Additionally, we have new grant, the Transdisciplinary Opportunity Program, or TOP. If you don't know what that is, it's an opportunity to get $50,000 for 2 years if you are a group that's made up of across silos or across colleges, with a neat idea that can grow on WKU's campus. I put it out. We got 7 applications. I had a group that evaluated them. 4 came out of that. And next Wednesday, they have to do a TED Talk to try to convince people for the money. And it's open to the public from 3:30 to 5:00. next Wednesday. So they're all getting ready to give to go out and give us that at this point. At that point, the committee will get back together, ask for some more information about the proposals they're interested in, and we will allow them to move forward as we speak. So what we're hoping to do is kind of leave a college and go across that interdisciplinary realm. And lastly, we have innovative teaching grants and teaching development grants. And then number six is my favorite, is to build a better resourced and more highly functioning division. So when I came in, I signed 900 pieces of paper a day, which was just crazy. I mean, if anybody was getting paid, I was signing the piece of paper, which I thought that went out 25 years ago, but I was mistaken. And we didn't have a budget model. The budget model that was here, I don't know what it was, and I will never say I will know what it was, but RAMP was at that point where a group of us spent huge amounts of time, the deans and everybody, putting it in. And it's been really good to this point. And along with that, what we've done is started to put in electronic efficiency. Things like Slate, which is what's used to try to get students to come here. That's a CRM model that allows us to push things out to students. We do it both in undergrad and we're about to do it in grad. We did FLAC, which is how we pay people. So now it's all done electronically, which is great. We've gone to Anthology, which helps us do, in some cases, portfolios, and we've gone to CourseLeaf, which allows us to do curriculum. So we've added all of those kinds of things to create efficiencies on this campus and to make things easier to approve and move forward to the next groups. And then my favorite, the last one is SACS, which is reaccreditation. I can't wait till 2025. The minute 2025 comes and that's put in, I'm on vacation. How's that? SACS is great. I appreciate that they want to know everything that they want to know, but it takes 4 years to get there. And we've been working on it since the day I walked on campus, which is 2021. And that's crazy to me that I've been working since 2021 to get ready to have a SACS reaffirmation and a QEP. But we will be ready. We are on time. We are on schedule. Beth Lavis has done an amazing job for us at this point. And everything is going fine as we see it, and there's still more to do. And then I want to come to back to student success, which I think is at the heart of what we are and what makes us different. When you look at this institution, we're not a number. They know who you are. And one of the things is that we service a group of students here who will get one chance to be successful in a large number of cases. And that one chance of being successful may hinge on whether or not we can help them when they hit that inflection point of needing some help. And we have to be there to be able to do that. And if you do that, they'll graduate and you will have changed their lives and their families' lives. And that's a really important thing. And I think it's a passion. It's not just a career. So when I think of this, this is why it was in 92 font. And when you look at it, the two biggest, I think, that are out there right now, initiatives that are going on are the Living Learning Communities, which are associated with the First Year Village, and I think that's made a huge difference in who we are and what we do. And the other one being First Gen Student Initiative that's going on across campus with about 500 to 600 students in it. In both cases, these could never have been done without everybody on this campus working together. Back to where I started. None of these could be done in individual silos or individual offices. They've all been done. They have to be done together. So having said that, I just want to show a few things. If you talk about living learning communities, the question always is students want to come to these? I've been on a bunch of campuses, and students usually ignore them or go, I don't want to be a part of it. Here, we're in the exact opposite. And I'm not so sure I'm always happy about that because I'm always trying to find more room and more ways to do more students, but it's gone up 24% since we put it in. We now have 1,265 students wanted in this last year. We are servicing over 1,000 right now, which is over a third of all incoming freshmen are in an LLC. Why is that important? Well, here's why it's important. If you're in an LLC, your retention rate is 11% higher. If you're one of these groups, like a URM or an underrepresented minority, your retention rate is 16% higher or 16 points higher if you're a first gen, it's 19, and if you're low income, it's 17. And one of the hardest things to take care of on a college campus is to close those gaps for those groups. And one of the reasons we've been able to close those gaps is that this LLC, run by faculty and Siddle and Crystal and Marco and all the people that are associated with it, have figured out how to engage these freshman students both in the classroom, both academically and socially. And these guys are true groups, and it's the faculty who has done this. Tons of credit to the faculty that work in these areas. They have been outstanding, and they have found their niche, as they say. And it's got to be a love to go do this, and they have done an amazing job. But it's changed who we are. The other one, the first gen. So I came on campus and asked the question, is were we doing anything for first gen? And they had talked about it, but nothing was going on. To me, that's an important one for me. I'm a first gen, right? I'm that kid who got that one chance and luckily stands here. I think there's a lot of the deans are those kids. So we have a vested interest in that. And what we've done is built a program that I think takes care of the first gen for the first couple of years. And we are still expanding, but it goes all the way from high school. So we're bringing high schoolers on who are first gen to talk to them about college, show them what college is for a week, and then say, hey, you can be here and you can be successful, all the way to alumni mentoring programs. So lots of good stuff going on, continually working, trying to build communities where people find their belonging and can be successful. So that's those. And then I want to say that's not all of it, right? We have a Gates Foundation grant where we're looking at student success, equity, intents. It's a terrible name. Basically, what it does is it look, yeah, Gates missed the name. What can I tell you? And all of that is what they basically did was they wanted to know what were the number one issues on your campus that if you changed, you could increase retention. And there's a whole list that they go through, and then they evaluate your campus, and then they come onto your campus and have a conversation with you about how can we take these two and ultimately what can you do to improve it. And we're right at that stage. They've identified for us what it is. I will say one was advising, and the second one, I don't even remember the second one, because advising went to the top of the list right away. And they're due in here, I think, in the next couple of months to have a longer conversation with us. AASCU, which is the American Association of State Colleges and Universities, we have a grant with them to look at how the schedule we put together in Astra and how we schedule classes and when we schedule classes affects students. And is it the right kind of schedule so that students have an opportunity to take the classes when they need those classes to be successful? So we're in the middle of that as we speak. We've done transfer student success with a CPE grant, and we've done the Inclusive Teaching Academy. So lots going on. And I want to finish with this. I think if you start to talk about recruitment, retention, and degree completion, the reason you heard those numbers today is because students, when you talk to them, want to know a couple of things. It's pretty easy. One is they want to know that there's wraparound services to help them when they need their help. And if you look at this institution, we've done an incredibly good job at creating wraparound services that will allow students to be successful. So they see that. So that excites them, right? Two is money. I'm not going to kid anybody, right? Students are looking at scholarships, looking at what the cost is. Can I get out without lots of loans, or what can I? Is it cheaper to be here or not? So scholarships have played a huge role. But the third thing they constantly look at is academic or curricular quality. They want to know that the program they're going to, in a large number of cases, is a cutting-edge program that will allow them to leave here and either go to graduate school or go to a career right away. And it's up to us as academic affairs to make sure that departments and colleges are constantly looking at their curriculum to update it, modernize it, and do those kinds of things so that we can be successful into the future. And I have spent, oh God, I've now been in, I think, 19 departments this semester with this story, asking them and challenging them to think about how do you improve or how do you constantly look at your curriculum to make sure it's modern, to make sure that it's what students are looking for, and asking them to think 5 and 10 years out about what that program will look like in the future. And with that, I'm going to stop there, and that gives you what we're some of the stuff that we're doing in academic affairs. And I'll take any questions.
Yeah, what a great presentation, and love your enthusiasm, Provost Fisher. It's a great overview, and I think gives all the regents a renewed vision of what we're about, and how important, of course, the academic piece of all of this is. Students may be the heartbeat of the university, but faculty are the brains, and got to have staff to support them, David. But that's what we're about. Comments, questions?
I just want to thank Provost Fisher for that presentation. I thought it was outstanding, and I appreciate all that good information you did. An outstanding job of giving us a real good background and summary of what's going on.
Thanks.
I appreciate it.
I think it certainly speaks to the statistics you opened the meeting with, Mr. Chairman, and again, we're countering trends in that, and I hope that that parlays into us being able to do more for students, faculty, and staff as we grow. So it's a good story that we need to continue and expand on. All right, if there are no other comments or discussion, Provost Fisher, did you have anything else?
I do. To go along with what we've been doing over a long period of time, which is to bring faculty in to talk about their research in a quick manner. I looked at it. So. As today we have the honor of having Dr. Austin Griffith here, who's the Director of Life Skills Center for Child Welfare and Education and Research and Associate Professor in the Department of Social Work here at WKU. He has a long bio that you have that I supplied you guys with, but I'm going to say today that the majority of his research is focused on improving the lives of professionals who work with vulnerable populations by enhancing their health, wellness, and work-life balance. And he's here to show us that today.
Hey, everybody. Appreciate this. What we're going to do today, we're just going to walk through this. It's really an honor to be here. Just really thankful for this, no doubt. My name's Austin Griffiths. Graduated WKU twice. I think the best way to go into this, we're just going to, just for a couple minutes, I want to tell this kind of like a story. First of all, I want to say thanks so much, certainly for all the support that I get and that we get. And I certainly want to kind of just kind of tell you all about this Child Welfare Center that we have here at WKU. This is something that we're working really hard. We've got a lot of projects that are making a real difference in this community and elsewhere. And if you don't know about it, now's the time. So with that being said, I'm gonna start with a couple of slides that it's not about me, it's never about me, but I kind of want you to just know a few things. So the essence of creating this Child Welfare Center, if you see here, I've certainly got a few slides that we're gonna go through, but I think it's kind of relevant that I worked in child welfare for a number of years. There's a lot of wonderful people that work in child welfare here and elsewhere. There's a lot of needs. There's a lot of needs being met by people that work really, really hard in public and private child welfare. So child welfare, as we say, belongs to all of us. There are people that work with and in the child welfare system. So with that being said, it's a picture of me with Judge Reed in Hart County, so it really matters a lot to me. But when I worked for the state government, I had an opportunity in 2009 to apply for what's called the MSW stipend program, which is federal financial support to get into the MSW program here at WKU. Great news, I became a social worker and I got my MSW at Western Kentucky University. So I already had a degree in sociology from WKU, and then I got financial support from the federal government through the MSW stipend program to get my MSW at Western Kentucky University. So I'm really excited about that. And if you read this here, basically, when I got my MSW at Western Kentucky University, excellent support, excellent training, thinking about how I could make this difference. I'm getting my MSW. I'm thinking about what could we possibly do, just kind of driven to kind of make this difference. So it's really about here, how can we help to change and improve this system that helped me to change my, or that helped me to define my professional or purpose? I applied to the University of Kentucky's PhD program. So with that being said, I like to put this up here because this really hasn't changed. Y'all can read this, but the reason I applied to the PhD program in social work at the University of Kentucky because I wanted to implement change for the child welfare system, for the child welfare worker. I'm devoted to giving the child welfare worker a voice through the implementation of research and advocacy. So it's really that simple. It hasn't changed. And I think there's something to be said for me and others that are just really driven for that mission. So I just like to put that up there. I like to share that at times. But moving forward as we go through this, if this will click or not. There it is. There it is. So we created a research center here. So there's some good pictures as we kind of move this chronology. I think sometimes these visual illustrations are good kind of for an audience. We now are located here at the, what some call the dock house, but we call it the child welfare cottage, right? Because it's a cottage. But nonetheless, we've created a research center here at Western Kentucky University. There has been a lot of interest. We are building an alliance. This is something very exciting. We have a lot of passionate members at this university, in other countries, at other universities. There's a lot I could talk about, but today I'm just going to get to the point. So with all that said, we have built an alliance, certainly. We've been around for 4 years. Our mission is supporting the development of child welfare professionals, as Provost said, really to serve Kentucky's children and families, but we certainly believe, and this isn't just saying it, we can do more together. Something else I want to mention, really excited, Life Skills has partnered with us. They are all in. As you've heard, we are the Life Skills Center for Child Welfare Education and Research. Here's just a quick graphic that you can see, and most of y'all know about Life Skills. They provide premium healthcare services. So the great thing is Life Skills says, we provide services across the lifespan. How can we partner with you to help you to build capacity to deliver services? Excellent. So thankful for that. So there are a number of projects we're involved, whether we're evaluating their services, driving cutting-edge research, using biometric technology. We're going to go through a couple of those just real quick here in a second. But very, very thankful for that and that five-year commitment so far. Last slide before we hit some of these projects that we have that are current. Really, this is the culture that we've built. As you can read, service, collaboration. One of the things I want to stress is that it's really incredibly and entirely interdisciplinary. So we got folks from around campus. I've studied up a little bit. Interdisciplinary, different professionals, diverse backgrounds. Certainly all about DEI. But there is a return on investment. I think that's very, very evident because all the projects I'm going to show, short of one, these individuals from different agencies have contributed money because they want to invest in our services. That's a real thing. So it's really something that we're really humble and very passionate about. We take a very great responsibility in having a return on investment for these services. So with that said, let's go through a couple of these. Definitely not going to take the time to explain all that. I'm sorry that these are probably small words, so it might be hard to read. But what I will say is each of these are on our website. At the top, you're going to see the logos from the partnering agencies. All of these are current projects. There's a lot of them. That's exciting. So with that said, we have this project here. It's called the Child Welfare Analytics Collaborative. This is a partnership with the state government where we've just hired 400 individuals where we are using databases to be proactive as far as analytics with tracking trends and being in front of child welfare as far as services and other things when it comes to the state government and all the things that they do with a number of different services. But here at Western Kentucky University, I could probably talk about that for 2 hours. But this is a really huge platform, and all these projects include students as well. This wellness initiative, which includes Life Skills in the state of Kentucky as well, includes biometric technology. So this is a focus on child welfare workers. We were able to secure some devices from Finland where people wear them on their person, and it tracks physiological data. I've got a team of nurse practitioners from here at WKU. They're wonderful. And we were able to collect a lot of really neat physiological data that's making a real big international difference because child welfare workers face a lot of stress, burnout, a lot of physiological things. So I lived it, I know it, and a lot of other people have. So this is just a really great project that's making a difference too. This is great. This is a partnership between three different applied research centers here in our college. So you've got our center, also the Center for Biomedical and Workforce Health, and the Institute for Rural Health. So this is a great interdisciplinary partnership that's talking about using photo voice to help connect students and community professionals. So this is really about burnout and coping resources for helping students. This is something that's going to take shape over November. It's really exciting, and you can see the participants here. Moving along, another study. We worked with the state government because foster parents are critical. Foster parents need information and knowledge, and we launched a state study partnering with the state government to launch a survey throughout private and public foster parents, and we were able to compare and contrast, not only soliciting information for feedback about what we can do better, but to look across the state about information for foster parents. So that's kind of the essence of this study, another partnership with the state government. Pretty exciting. Another one that's kind of under our workforce tab, we're partnering with individuals overseas, which is something that we're very excited about, which is looking about coping responses. Again, the physiological and certainly psychological impact of doing this work is something we need to be on the cutting edge of and advocating for, because it's a difficult job. It's a very meaningful job when you're in child welfare. So a few more slides we'll get to. Our center is providing services. So as it says on the left, evaluation and analysis, Lift Learning has a excellent curriculum for foster youth who are aging out. Everything from life skills to financial to budgeting, it's something that's adopted in many areas across the country. So they've reached out to us with our capacity and said, can you help us to evaluate that? We said, absolutely. So we partnered with Lift Learning. You can see the individuals, very interdisciplinary, Dr. Redford, other people on here. So this is a partnership. We're providing services with individuals. And this is primarily under evaluation, but again, improving lives of families and children as it pertains to the work that we do. This year, the Kentucky Judicial Commission had a large mental health summit, so we're not working on stigmatizing mental health. We're working on how can we better work. Maybe some of y'all went. Maybe there's over 1,000 people that went. This was at the Galt House in May. They reached out to us and asked us if we could evaluate the entire summit. It was an excellent opportunity, and these are individuals that were a part of our team to evaluate. I was working on the final report this morning. So, again, providing evaluation services, very interdisciplinary, but working with the community in an interdisciplinary act around behavioral health to shape perception so we can better work with professionals in this space. A couple more. The crisis unit here at Life Skills, very, very important. I know from a former child welfare worker, individuals sometimes go through significant crises. Clearly, we need to be proactive and do things the right way. So they reached out to us and asked if we could reach out to the community members and make a reach into some type of data analysis, some survey, and communicate with individuals in the community, find out some feedback about what we could do better. And so this is just another example of a project that we have done with them under the evaluation component. One more. The Penny Royal Center is part of Life Skills. You know that? And they have a large SAMHSA grant, $4.8 million, and they're providing a lot of new innovative services, and they've reached out to us. And Dr. Murphy and I have been helping to evaluate their services. So this is just another one, but the great thing more than the evaluation is they're providing mental health, behavioral health services to rural individuals. All of these projects that I'm just breezing through have a story, a commitment. There are real outcomes on behalf of vulnerable families and children. That's the takeaway, and I'm talking fast, respectfully. But there is a real outcome that we are measuring on behalf of how this is helping people's lives. I don't throw a lot in here. I want to stop before I kind of just glaze over that. Let me go through a couple more. Dr. Bawama, Dr. Green, and myself, maybe you've heard about this. We have created an innovative virtual reality product, as you can see here, that's focused on assisting child welfare workers to deal with and recognize their awareness on behalf of implicit bias. This is something else that's very important. It's very difficult to make assessments in real time when you're working in child welfare. So diversity, equity, and inclusion are always a hallmark of the center. Also, this is one that's also taking shape and launching right now. child welfare workers, especially in this area. We have wonderful, robust refugee and immigrant populations here in this Bowling Green area. They have asked for appropriate training, curriculum, and education when they're working with new populations. What we did is we reached out to the Children's Justice Act, and we've been funded twice now to develop a curriculum, and now we're going to deliver it, how to better train child welfare workers to engage and professionally respond and work with child welfare workers who are going to be working with refugee and immigrant populations here in this area. So this is just another project that we're doing right now. We worked on another project, I think I got two or three more, with Dr. Cassidy Kay was over at Murray State helping service providers at SVRCs and child advocacy centers about how they shifted to telehealth after COVID-19. That's been very fruitful, and this has helped individuals to better understand moving from a more face-to-face tradition. We all know how COVID has kind of reshaped kind of interaction. Of course, we're on Zoom and stuff today, but we're talking about SVRCs and child advocacy centers. So there's very sensitive, timely stuff that's happening when you're in a therapeutic realm and individuals are facing these types of challenges. And the last one, working with parents and children at the same time, collaborating with the child welfare advocacy center. This is the previous one. When a lot of intense stuff is happening, when I worked in child welfare, we would always focus on the child, but it was not enough when there was a mom or a dad in the house who was really looking for services, and we need to make a proactive, preventative effort to make sure that the parent also has access to evidence-based, real services in a consistent way so that family is whole and that family can move forward. So it's the child and the parent. That's really what this is getting at. There's a lot of really good stuff. I can't wait to talk about this project, but probably not this second. Last slide here, child welfare certainly belongs to all of us. Really excited about the things that we're doing. We've also created a Colonnade course called CHHS 100. I think y'all are excited to hear this. It's called Introduction to Child Welfare. It's incredibly interdisciplinary. It's growing about twofold every time. We've just opened two courses for the spring. Excited because students, and we are starting to measure this, we're going to put through an IRB for a survey about what they're learning and how their vision is kind of shaping about what they want to do with this knowledge to help improve their community. This isn't for only people that will work in child welfare like I did. It's about better understanding how the child welfare system works. So whether they're a nurse or an attorney or anything else, they can be excited about, now I understand how the child welfare system works and what can I do to be a proactive contributor and make things better. So I think that's it, and I appreciate your time with Master Griffiths. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Griffiths, for an excellent presentation. Regent Dennison, I'm going to let you comment.
This is definitely in my lane, being a pediatrician here. So I think I need to take CHHS 100, Introduction to Child Welfare.
Do it. Yes.
I probably do, as all pediatricians need to, but I'd love to have lunch with you. I mean, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, you know, and what I see could be very valuable to you, and I'm sure what you can tell me would be valuable to me. So, you know, I would just love for you to get local pediatricians involved because we see the horrors of the child welfare system, as well as some good things that come out of it, too. So, you spoke to my heart for sure. So.
I'm excited to hear that. And I've met you, but I've heard a lot about you for years. I worked in Glasgow, and CPS work is all good stuff, so nice to meet you.
I take care of tons of
children. I know people that work with you that I have a lot of faith in, too.
And there's so much that needs to be done to improve it, and anything you can do to make it better is what we need to do.
Gotcha. And I think that those slides are a reflection. We're talking about all of those. We're really maxed out at capacity, but the good thing is all of those slides reflect many agencies and partnerships that are coming to us and saying help, and we're delivering, and it matters because WKU is right there doing the things that we need to do. So this is really exciting stuff.
Help.
All right. Regent Brinkley.
Does anyone else have any comments or questions?
Philip, I've got one. Regent Brinkley. Dr. Griffiths, I want to thank you for this presentation and just say as a former ward of the state, Kentucky, and as somebody that has served on the Foster Care Review Board, has also been a foster parent, and as a result, an adoptive parent, someone that's married to a family law attorney who has been recognized for guardian ad litem work. I cannot stress the importance of the work. Having sat in those capacities, certainly I want to echo everything that Dr. Dennison has said, but I think that this is something that often goes overlooked and underfunded by the Commonwealth. And I will say that I think the work that you are all doing is admirable. I think that as a Colonnade opportunity, everyone should take CHHS 100, because if there's something that impacts our community at a family level, even I think it's an opportunity for people to understand just how many people are involved and interact with the system. And it's also on the successful implementation of many of those aspects leads to many first-generation students, and many of those students come here. So when you look from beginning to end, it is an absolutely long-term, lifelong process. And I want to say that I applaud every piece of work that you all do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Any other comments or questions for Dr. Pittman?
I'd just like to ask, so young you wanted to set out and make a positive impact on this field. What are we doing to help you do that? What could we do better to help you do that? WKU.
I think that, great question. Being receptive to setting up our infrastructure to where we can quickly respond and be efficient, because full disclosure, we have people reaching out to us and asking us to deliver probably faster, because I have really high expectation of the quality of my work, as I do on behalf of this university that I care so much about. But it's to the point where we're really reaching a level to where it is crystal clear that people are thrilled, and we have the proof of concept is there, so to speak. The alliance is there, and we're strong. So helping to, on behalf of the logistical mechanisms, have incredible support from the President, Provost, from the Embassy, but moving forward with kind of capacity building and infrastructure as far as some of that would free us up to move the needle in incredible ways that are measurable and make a monumental difference in the community, and I have a million examples. I mean, I'm ready.
I've noticed the Provost is taking notes.
This is exciting, and I'm so thrilled with all the support we have had, and so thankful for your comments, because we're one step at a time, and we're there.
So, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Dr. Griffiths, for an excellent presentation. I just want to add my thanks to all these others. And this is information we need, and you did a great job of presenting it to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, as a final comment, I'll say it does take a person with uncommon bravery and commitment to be in this area. And as a university, part of our main reason for existence is inquiry and providing new knowledge that speaks to the common public good. And clearly, you're meeting those goals that we have. So, a great presentation. Thank you for being here. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I think that concludes that. Academic Committee agenda.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Bale.